To show the frustrations, the emphasis is real. okay, so let's go over some stuff. So the first one will be like introduction. I'll open it up, talking about introducing Not Gonna Lie Again. And then I will basically be the moderator for the entire thing. And the things that I shared with you on WhatsApp, I'll be asking you anyway. So it's going to be like a flowing conversation. And yeah, we'll see where it takes us. Sometimes I do have to pay attention to it because I tend to kind of like, oh, this conversation is so good. And then I forgot to keep track with the entire thing. So that's like for me more than it is for you, to be honest. So at the end of the day, it's just like to see what kind of conversation that we can get out of this. And ultimately, I think like my entire goal is that I want people to be able to hear from the various perspectives, because oftentimes when we feel either as a victim, as a or as a person who is in the whole whatever, as a parent, as a student, as a teacher, we all feel different things, right? But if we can hear from the various angles about it, hopefully it gives people a bigger picture about it, that oh, I thought I was struggling, apparently the other people are struggling as well, but differently,
right?
So that's the entire thing. So yeah, are you ready?
Ready. I'm good to go.
Okay, so in 3, 2, hey guys, so welcome back to the Not Gonna Lie podcast, but a tea break room where we talk about everything there is to talk about in life, because not gonna lie, life is hard. I thought after, you know, school, graduating, work, built my own empire, and then that's it. You know, sail towards the sunset and that's it. But apparently that's not the entire story. So today we're still going to talk about education with a dear, dear friend of mine. Someone who taught me in university and I worked with in university like almost a decade ago, I think. Yeah, more than. So this is Kak Tasya Madanuarte, someone who I really do respect, someone who actually taught me a lot of things. And again, I really do feel this is going to be a fun conversation to have with her. So would you like to introduce yourself, Kak?
Sure. Hi, I'm Madita Shinwata. I actually started teaching when I just graduated from my master's degree. So I got an offer from my professor in Itaybe. So he actually asked me if I have a free time to talk to Warren. I said, let me, you know, make sure that I have the schedule right and everything. And I said, okay, yeah, tomorrow is free, then I can do it. Okay, what should I talk about? And then he was just talking, oh, you can talk about tourism or something that to do with business. And then I was like, okay, and who am I gonna talk to? Because he's so random, you know, like he doesn't really actually tell me like who am I gonna talk to, and then how big the audience is, and apparently it's a huge audience. And then I was like, okay. But and then after that, it's sort of becoming a habit, and then other professor asked me to teach again and then offer it. So I have a lot of job offers that puts me. At the end of the day, I have been working with 4 different universities.
Nice.
Teaching for bachelor and master degree. But then I stopped teaching after I had my second son, because I need to take care of the first one. He actually had some disability that I have to take care of. Okay. But yeah, so I've been in the university world for, I think from 2007 up to 2015, and then I'll start. I still do some lot counseling and do stuff like that for students. So yeah.
Okay, so that is incredible. So I remember hearing you for the first time, and and we know that professor and his randomness, and it's. Okay, for those of you who don't know, and who for those of you who are curious what we're talking about, this is a professor that is very dynamic. Okay, I'm going to just use that word, and you can use your imagination of how the pacing would be when it comes to keeping up with whatever he has in his mind. I remember just you coming in with your personality and you being you, which means that you're being super real with every single thing. And that was awesome. Yeah. That was awesome because it really helps. I guess, like, at least for me, it helps us as students in university to follow your lead rather than just like, you know, cause like in, okay, I'm going to admit in school, I wasn't a nice student. I made my teacher cry. I slept in class and all kind of things. Because you know, puberty, I guess. I don't know why. But having someone like you taking charge of the class, just me being me. So that's why I tell my students, whatever that you are trying to do, I've done it. And probably I did it worse. So like y'all can stop trying to be funny. Like it's just no. but like exactly. Having someone like you coming into class, that helps a lot to settle everyone and then kind of like try, like helps us to lock in to what you're trying to say, because we know that at least I knew at the time that whatever that you said comes from not theoretical, but it comes from an experience, right? So that was something that I find much more valuable compared to some other lecturers that, again, there's nothing against them. But I think like when you can teach from your experience based on what you have learned and you put into practice, and then that becomes something that you can share, it has such a big difference, right? And yeah, that's something that I just straight away saw from you. And like you have been, what you said, like 2008 and 2007 until 2015, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
That's like 8 years, and you're still do consultation for university students. So that is crazy. So what I do catch though, you said something about you just graduated, and then it's not as if it was your decision to get into education, teaching university students,
not
right?
At all.
But what made you stay though for 8 years?
So it's really because I had a very interesting and I don't know how should I put this? It's a very fun experience that I went through when I pursued my education abroad. And then I had a chance to take another education here in Indonesia for my master's degree. And for some reason, there's a little gap that I see. My professors abroad really makes me understand the whole lesson and not just theoretically. So sometimes they skip over pages and say, oh, you're not going to use this in real life. Just, you know, go through. And that's what, for me, it's something that's valuable because the teacher in here, most of them, they just teach books. You just read the textbook and that's it. And you might not use that in real life at all.
I'm right? so glad. I'm so glad. I'm so happy right now that you talked about that. I'm so happy. For those of you who I have taught, you know this for a fact. I never, ever use any books. Ever, like I once in a blue moon, right? So I'm so happy because yes, I resonate with that a lot, because oftentimes books help. Okay, don't get us wrong, books help, right? Books were made by people who has done their research, and they put all of those all of the things that they find and they put to practice, they apply and all those things that they found to be true into the books. And that was made with the intent to help people who are learning the same topic or subject. So books, don't get us wrong. We have books. We use books. The reason why we can actually skip books.
Yes.
because
we read a lot of books.
Exactly. So because we already went through those books and then we find whether or not these books are usable or not, right? And I do agree. And here's the thing, though. We're not going to name the university that we were from, right? nothing against them. But I find myself having to learn through experience once I graduated and got into the real world, or basically to my job. And most often than not, I probably use about 25% of what I learned during university. And those are the practical skills, not necessarily the theoretical skills, because it doesn't match between what I did and what I actually do in the real world. And when I try to do freelancing, most often than not, the theoretical becomes a hindrance to what my clients want, right? And so there's a really big gap for me when there's so much emphasis on the theoretical aspect of it, and there's not enough balance between the practical to it. So I really do agree. And again, I'm really happy that you said it. I just wish that all educators get this, that you have to also, and this is something that I really do believe and I really do put to practice, is that, and I tell my students all the time, if I can't teach you how to apply this in your real life, I fail. Because then it doesn't make sense. It's not going to do you any good. Right. So I do agree with that. And that's awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah, especially when I know that there's a lot of professors that may not have enough resources to books. And when I was in the States, I took my bachelor in the States. So it's really different. The first thing that you have to do is to pass the library test. It's a must.
Wow.
And then, the library test is basically teaches you how to do research, like how to get books, and then in what rows that we can find this kind of book, and then how to write properly, as in Google's, like the search engine, like what, comma, or and, putting those kind of notation for you to make it easier for you to read the book that you need. So books is really easily accessible for me. And then the university provide with a lot of online libraries, not only the physical library, but also online libraries. And then we have a lot of books that we have to read. There are, I think one class particularly that I learned about American history, it was really hard for me because for each of the quiz, we have like about 4 to 6 quizzes plus tests, each of them based on one novel. So, and then a novel, that's a lot of reading. And the novel, as you know, it could be, the language may not be as simple as you see in a textbook.
Oh, yeah.
So then you have to be able to relate.
Don't tell me that one of the books is actually Wuthering Heights.
Oh, definitely.
Oh,
so,
no.
And then some of the books are actually about the slavery, and then so they use different terms that that's really not a common term, especially for me, that coming from abroad, I'm fresh off the boat from Indonesia, and then suddenly have to learn terms and words that I've never heard about, the movement that I've never heard about, and then like the Black Panther. I mean, if you don't know about the history, you don't know where the Black Panther character came from. It's actually from a strike. The Black movement in the States. So, and you don't know that most of the celebrity, the A-list celebrity in Hollywood, they are in the Black Panther movement. So, so there's a lot of things. And when I learn abroad, that come out as reality. So you can actually pull a red thread from the theory to what's in life. So that's when I started to read and then connect it to life and then sort it out, which ones that can actually use it in real world and those that cannot. And I'm saying because we don't live in a perfect world.
Oh,
yeah. Theoretically, you may be able to use these kind of tools, you know, but then those tools may cost a lot. So you have to come up with some other solution that would give you the same, almost the same result with a different, value of money. So, but then that's when you actually need to use this. So university is not just about you memorizing words on the textbook, but it's really about incorporating those theory into what you can apply in life. And in terms of when I'm teaching in Indonesia, that's where all the lesson I took. So it's really, it's more like enlightenment for me when I go to school in the States. The teacher, how they react and everything is different. Like physics, oh my God. I'm good at physics in Indonesia, but I just don't enjoy it. I just don't see when I'm going to apply this to.
Yes.
But then when I was in the States, I have to have physics, even though my major, my bachelor degree is in product design. I mean, who would have thought product design major needs to learn about physics, chemistry, plastics, and all those things. But then they sort of have two different offer for physics class. One for physics major and one for non-physics major. So the teacher will teach in different kind of way of teaching. So it's not like in here. So all physics classes are teaching by physics lecturer for physics major. So it's not. It's for me, it's something new. And then the teacher doesn't have any grudge to the students.
Okay.
Grudge.
There's so many things that we can talk about that. I mean, first of all, because you already experience, I guess, like both world of education, one from the States and one in Indonesia. But I guess like in Indonesia, not as a student per se, but as someone who is teaching. And obviously that would show you the regular way that education system here is being taught, right? It's being done by your colleague and you know, by people around you and all those things. And even by what the students expect that they would learn, right?
Right.
Because I think like for the longest time, I remember like in Indonesia's education, at least for the national curriculums, it's really more about memorization, but there is probably about 5 to 10% application. Was like depending on your school, whether or not they have labs, whether or not they have like extracurricular activities after which you can try to apply it. But then that's like, that was by choice. If you want to, then you can. But if not, then that's it. And for the most part, it's really, these are the formula. And remember that, memorize that. And then we're going to give you some problem. You're going to have to solve it. And that's it. Right. But what I do know, what I do know is that let's take the States for example. They have a lot more emphasis on how do you apply this to something that we can actually pull an example for from the real world, right? There is that kind of like pathway. So although their theoretical is not as strong, but when it comes to application, that has a lot more, they have a lot more, or they are actually way more ahead of us, right? And personally for me, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, personally for me, I think that helps the students to develop their interest towards a particular subject way more than how we are doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So like, what's your thought on that, really?
So to tell you honestly, I will have to correct you a little bit. It's not that in the States, theoretically wise, they're not strong. They're very strong at it. And that's why the only reason they can come up with the applied practices over those theories because they know it very well.
Okay.
But then with my experience, to tell you honestly, I'm not very good with tests. So during my pursuing education throughout the K-12. I was having a hard time because I feel that I'm not smart enough. It's not that I'm not, you know, I'm failing in tests. No, I don't fail in tests, but I just don't think that it actually mimic how I actually have like what I have in mind, like my understanding. It doesn't really show that much. So because everybody takes different things out of a lesson, you know, like per se, when I'm teaching the class about fabrics, right? Okay. So some kids might understand more about tenun or songket, right? And some other kids might understand more about batik because that's where their passion is, where from. So it really exactly like what you're saying, by actually having this in a practical sense to them, it's easier to understand and to grasp and then choose which are their favorite in a way. And that's where, for me, when I was in high school in here, and then people say, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Seriously, I know nothing about what I want to be because there's so many things that I learn about and I don't know what I can do with those knowledges, you know?
Yes.
So when I first came to state, everybody says, you're good with talking. I think you need to be a public speaker. So then I enrolled for the, I forgot what major was it, but something got to do with the speaking major. So basically just making copywriting and those kind of stuff. And then I started to realize, is that really my passion? And then I was like, I just want to use my ability to communicate well with others just as, just like a vehicle, but not really, it's not really the main point. I want to have some knowledge to convey through my communication. Mm,
but it's not so something what you're passionate about.
Right. So then I go through the other majors and then I come up with the product design. The product design in my university is quite different than other school because it's more into the R&D research.
Okay.
So you actually do a lot of research about materials and then what can you do with this material and then to flex it out of the boundary that you may know. So, and then apply it for the product, daily product. But then this one I know, okay, I really like that. I can use my hands and then execute it to make different things. And then in here, you don't really have those classes. Like when I first came to our campus, everybody was so in awe just because I can actually do welding and then I can put some, you know, nuts and screws and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And it's not common in here.
Yep.
And to me, that's like what we do every day. I go in the lab until 7 at night. And that's I love working in a lab, working with different kind of resins and different kind of materials. And I don't see those in the kits that I see in here. The passion is not there. To me, when I see them, it's just basically go to school just because my parents told me to.
Yep. Yep. No, yeah, my parents wanted me to be something. Hi, hello. there's that part where also
Shisha.
It's okay. What's her name, by the way?
No, what's your name? Come. She doesn't okay. want to go in frame.
Okay. That's completely fine.
Kiana.
Wait, Kiana?
Yes.
Oh, hi Kiana. Hello. We're gonna edit this part. We're gonna cut this part. So because like I think like what you said has to do so much with the current condition of how our education is our education system is going on, right? And obviously the Minister of Education is trying to change that because his experience also comes from the States. And there's a lot more emphasis on how can we then use this in the real world? How do we apply this? Because if you only stick with the theoretical, and honestly, when you said that during the K-12, you didn't feel that you were excelling, right? You have a lot of knowledge, but that actually makes you feel more confused when you were asked, what do you want to be, right? And that is something that I do agree has a lot to do with the lack of applying all of these things, right? Because how can we actually know that we are good at something? Even like we know a lot of students have a particular interest in chemistry, in science, in medical, all of those things, but do they really, really know? That is something that I feel like we kind of like do need to work on, because if people see you now, I would say no one would have thought that you were actually struggling, or you were actually probably the B's and the C's during your high school years, right? Because and surprisingly, that is consistent with the conversation that I had with many other students who are in university right now, who are working, fresh grad, now working, that they were the same way. And when they were in high school, junior high, they were struggling. But it wasn't until, again, the passion thing, right? It wasn't until they got to university, they found what they're passionate about. And now they are the front runners in their batch, right? Because this is something that they really want to learn about. And I quote, it's because I get to choose the subjects that I want to learn, the professors that I want to learn from. That's when I realize it's my responsibility. So if I still fail, that's on me, because I chose them. If I fail, that's on me. And so there's just so many things to talk about this.
I know. And you know what? There's one funny thing that one time I went back to the high school that I went. It's the same school as my junior high. And then one of the teacher asked me, so what do you do now? And I said, I'm actually a manager in this company. I'm also in currently pursuing my graduate degree. And then she said, oh, really? You didn't never even do your homework. And I was okay.
But oh, my gosh. There's so many things to talk about that.
Yeah, your class wasn't even that interesting. And can you believe it? Somebody actually doubted me, and they said, oh my God, you party a lot. Like, how can you even, you know, pursue master degree? You know, when people go party, doesn't mean that they don't want to pursue a further education.
Oh no. Like, it's like, again, how does that, and this, I guess, like for me, being a teacher as well, it goes to show that a lot of times as a teacher, I have to be very careful what I'm bringing into my students, because that is so much, that's a very perspective-based statement, that you never do your homework equals to you should not be successful in your future, right? Because there is a bigger message that the teacher is trying to put an emphasis on, that if you never be a responsible person, blah, 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 and there's no discipline to, and then blah, 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 you should not be successful, right? And that's a very dangerous thing to put out there, because I can't imagine like being a student to hear that from your teacher, right? And because that is very demotivating. That is very demoralizing and demotivating, right? Because, my gosh, like, I get that there should be a consequence that if you don't do your work, right, then you should not get a score. I get that. I really do get that, right? But to say that if you are not this, then you will never be that in the future. Like, who are you to say that? Like, I really can't. There's just so many things. And
but that's how the education is here.
I know. And the dangerous part about that is it's still a culture,
Yes.
And that's a dangerous thing, because what are we trying to communicate here?
Indeed.
Right? And I think that this is a good segue as well when it comes to our next conversation, is because, like, right now, how many bachelor degrees, graduates, doctorates, master degree graduates who are out there but can't get a decent job that speaks volume to their degree, right? And it's not, right. There's nothing against their effort, their knowledge, their intelligence. There's nothing against that, but it's still a reality that we are overly saturated with people who have knowledge. And we are also overly saturated with people who have knowledge and who do have skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so right. I guess, like, the conversation that I want to have, does getting a degree still matters in the current world that we live in, right? Because I think we're kind of reaching at a point where people can actually be successful if they put their heart and thought into what they're passionate about without a degree,
right? So for me, I'm currently right now having a project with the government. It's really hard when you work with the government because you do need to have a degree. You need to have all the papers ready for you. Your reference letters, and then your degrees. And then if you don't have the same bachelor and graduate degree, they don't count, which is sad. Which is, in the real world, if you have a multidiscipline background, you earn more because you have more experience, you have more knowledge. But that doesn't work in here. And then I have a lot of friends that may not be from an educational background, but they're very successful. And I do notice that here in our country, you can only be successful without a degree, if you pursue your own business.
Yeah.
So, and what's sad is, to me, I'm very proud when I see kids at school, you know, learning their business day and selling stuff like, you know, coffee or whatever for their family friends on campus, and then they count the money that they have, the profit and everything, because that's how the real world kind of goes. But what I'm sad is sometimes I see in social media, I see kids that they sell food to help their parents, and that kids get bullied. And I'm like, he should be the role model for the other kids.
Exactly.
He should be
appreciated, right?
Right. That just doesn't make sense. So a different layer of economy and social level in Indonesia, selling items or products is considered poor. But if you work for the government, you're considered rich. Even though that's not necessarily true, you can be way more successful, way more wealthier than somebody working in the government if you can do your business good, you know, if you do it well. And those kind of perceptions been thought since very early age.
And
that's, so our Minister of Education have so many homeworks to do, and I don't think it, and this one third it would do, because it takes the whole generation to actually improve this.
Yeah.
And I personally always tell my students that if you're successful, I'm going to be the number one supporter, because I was, well, your teacher, and I'm very proud of who are you going to become.
Yeah.
And then if you fail, it's not your mistake, it's my mistake, because I make you fail. Because it means that I'm failing as an educator. I don't actually give enough knowledge for them to pursue their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always reflect back, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not perfect.
we are never gonna be perfect. So again, I think, like, I can understand that sentiment, because as educators, and it does sound extreme. Like, but wait, hold on. Their failings should be their own responsibility though, right? Because, you know, it's what they decide to do, it's what they, you know, and failure is a common thing. They learn from mistakes and all those things. Yes, we get that. We get that part, but there's also this moral responsibility that we have as an educator that we took it upon ourselves to equip our students to be able to overcome the things that happens in life. We understand that they will learn from the failures. We understand that we ourselves, we learn from our failures, right? But there is that kind of responsibility and somewhat baggage for us. And it's not necessarily a wrong thing. It's just that because we care. It's just because that, again, when we... And here's what I want the audience to get, right? As educators, we often become, and this is a common term out there, we become the second parent to the students because we actually are. It's a relational type of job or career. You are walking with these students, and sometimes, especially in the K-12 education, you're walking with the students a lot more than they do with their parents. Students spend from 7 until 3 or until 5. So if you think about it, that's about 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, right? And even after they go home, you still communicate with them. And it's a very relational kind of job that you can't help but build relationship with the students. And that's why the second, you're their second parent term comes into play. And again, there's not a single parent that I do know that does not want their child or their children to succeed. They just want to see them grow and flourish. That's just what it is, right? So there's that. And again, right. It does sound extreme, but I do get that sentiment, and I do feel that way as well myself for my students. And it's from what you just said, though, I guess what we can conclude is that the higher education is just like another tool. But what matters most would be what kind of passion that you have that you want to pursue and really do put a lot of effort in. And well, on the other hand, and this is the unfortunate part, would be there's still a lot of layers of conversation when it comes to just the social aspect, the cultural aspect, because that's where you will find a lot of resistance, I would say, because again, you're running your own business, but you don't have a degree to that. So people will look down on you, right? You're running a successful business, but you don't have a degree, so you can't get a government project. So all those kind of things is something that that we will encounter, right? But I do believe that it comes down to what do you want to achieve in life? Because I have friends who... they had a successful job, but because they want to pursue their passion, they have to start from zero again. And that was hard, but they're happy, right? I have friends who is older than me, but his passion is actually gaming and streaming. And that's what he's doing. And he's building off on that, and he's doing really, really well, right? So...
right.
I think there is already a shift currently, whether we want to agree or not, whether we want to buy into it or not, there is already that shift because, and I guess the reason why I want to talk about this, because again, you know what, students, children, they are still under the parents' rule, and they're parents. Again, I love you guys. Stop living through your children's life. And
that
again,
happens a lot.
Exactly. And just support them, love them, and give them all the opportunities in the world for them to live. Because You're ruining them. I'm just going to be flat out honest. I'm just going to be 100 here. You are ruining them because, and again, if you are pushing them out of love, and we can all agree that when you're pushing them, it's because out of love and out of your own experiences as well, then you want them to be successful. I think that that's the heart of it, right? And if they also have that kind of passion that you identify and then you want to push them to do it, that's great. But if they already verbalizing that their passion is in something else, help them, support them.
Yeah.
Right. I, like you, was I did not know what I wanted to do. So when I met you in university as a graphic design student, that wasn't even my passion. That wasn't even something that I like to do. Right. And I am now teaching, and I have been teaching for 5-6 years. And this is something that I realized that I love to do. And this is something that I know that I'm going to spend my entire life doing. Mm-hmm. And so, but there wasn't a class about teaching in school, right? There wasn't exactly a class about that, but, and there wasn't even really a good role model. I only have like one or two out of the many other teachers that I have in high school. I didn't have any teacher that I looked up to in my junior high. And it wasn't until I got to university, I only found like probably like you and who else?
Come on.
I'm just going to be a flat 100 right here. Like really honest. Probably you and two other, that was it, right? So there wasn't enough role model as an educator that made me want to be an educator myself. It wasn't until I got into this world that I built my passion off of, right? And that's why my bachelor degree was like, is not in education, right? I do have a certificate for that. And I was trained to be an educator, but in terms of like building off on a passion, it wasn't until like later on in life, right? So imagine that parents are trying to force their own belief even after their children already vocalizing that their passion is in something else, right? And so, wow, higher education.
Yeah, so as a parent myself, I try not to push anything to my kids. What I do right now is just to observe and see where they're good at and facilitate them.
Yes.
So like my second one, he wants to be an athlete. So I said, okay, let's go. And then you have to practice like this and that. And it's like, yeah, sure, why not? So that's the only thing I can do as a parent. So I can't really push him. Even a simple thing like drawing, I never teach him how to draw.
Oh, yeah.
You know my family background.
Oh, yeah.
Not even a single thing. Okay, I never teach him, okay, so this is how you draw a cat. This is how you draw a chicken. Never in my life I do that because they need to have their own perspective of what they see.
Yes.
It may be different, but it's not wrong.
Yeah.
They have to be proud of their own perspective.
Yeah.
And it's not easy at first because other might think being not responsible enough with my kids because others like teaching their kids really how to write this and that, you know? But
yeah.
With me, and then every kids have their own pace.
Yes. Very true.
They may not be the same. Yeah, even though they come from the same womb. They're not the same.
Yep.
They're human. They're
exactly
unique in their own way.
Exactly. So I do. Sorry. Go ahead.
So by noticing the differences in them, it's what makes my student also feel appreciated, and that's how we connect between students and educators.
Yes, that's again so good because again we talked about how it's relational, right? When you only see a class as a class, but not as a compilation of individuals inside, there's already that should already be a red flag, because again, different students have different pacing. Ultimately, you do want them to learn the skills that you believe is going to help them, right? You do want to share it with them. But the way that they see those skills and how they can apply it, it's different. Because whether or not they see that as important does not rely on us as educators to communicate that. That is something they have to experience. All I get to do as a teacher is to provide enough opportunities for them to apply it and see it for themselves. Is it beneficial for me? That's what I believe anyone should learn. Right. And I do agree with you when it comes to children. For example, my own child later on. I have zero problem if they suddenly want to say, Dad, I don't want to go to school today. I'm like, I'm down. Where do you want to go? Like, we can just go to the beach and just, like, you know, party over there. Like, it's completely fine. I have zero problem. I'm going to be flat out honest here, because the counter to that would be people said, like you brought up before, oh, you're not being a responsible parent. You're not, you know, you're being irresponsible for the education, this and that. I will flat out explain to everyone right now. The numbers and the grades on the report card of my child will never, ever determine her trajectory of her life. Ever.
Yes.
Okay? Those are a standardized grading system from an age where industrial crap just started. And they do need skilled engineers and skilled practitioners back, you know, centuries ago. Like, you can look up the history of that. You have Google, just look it up. Okay. So that is the same system that we are still using here today. And here's the problem, people. With that grading system, right? And here is the honest truth as a teacher in school. My students do not need me to get those grades. Students do not need their teachers to work on the system that can help them get the A's and the B's, the 90s and the 100s. Okay? Yep. If they are smart enough to utilize google.com and find all the past papers, all of the example papers, all of the formulas that they can practice on, they do not need their teachers. I will be 100% honest here right now. They don't need me. What they do need me, however, is to be their role model, is to teach them the life skills, is to show them how to apply those things in the real world, is to help them to understand that it takes more than just those knowledge. But if it's about just to get the B's and the A's, I'm telling you right now, they don't need us. There are too many things that they can find. There are too many resources that they can find in the world right now through internet that they can succeed without teachers. Here's the dark truth behind that. Sometimes they can even learn way better from the internet than they do with their teachers.
Correct.
That is just the brutal truth right now. Okay?
It's true, especially with geography. You know, like, not every teacher been abroad.
Oh,
you
cannot
say this place is and that. And this happened in a lot of school where the children can go abroad, but not the teacher. So when teachers stated a fact, the student would be like, I went there. And it's not like that. It's not like how you stated it. And with me, to be honest, I always tell my kids that when they ask me, remember, you are smarter than mama. So I will only tell you what I know, but you can check again the truth, whether I'm right or not. So I, you know, keep accepting myself that I may be wrong, because the generation gap is way too far. And with knowledge, it's always evolving. There's always something new. There's always new invention. Yes. So I may not be true anymore.
Exactly.
Right? It probably be true at one point.
Exactly.
But not anymore.
Exactly. So again, look. Okay, so we talk about the greats, and there's just so many things to talk about that from you know, the unwillingness to change. Because after, if you think about it, after two centuries, like a century and a half, actually, don't you think that it's time for you to change the entire thing? Right? After like a century and a half, and the world has changed so much since then, don't you think that the system that you used a century and a half ago should also evolve, right? But
well, true, and that's one of the reasons I don't put my kids in the national educational system, because I want to be I want them not to be graded on how we used to be graded. And then, but there's, even though in this system there's still one or two teachers that still fixated on the system that we were in.
Yeah.
So with my son, I just had an experience where the teacher says, okay, since your son is not doing this dictation well, then I will gonna give him 2 on the report card. So basically the grading system in my kid's school is 1 to 5, 5 is the biggest number, yeah, and 1 for the lowest. And the only problem is this one test. And it's not that he doesn't understand the concept, but he just don't do it right layout wise. So yeah. Because it was dictated, and he's a very kinesthetic kid, so his listening is not as good as if he actually have a real meeting. So this online meeting, it's really hard on him. And this teacher says that he will get a 2. So I said, boo, if it's really that's his actual grade, then I cannot do anything. That's your right to give whatever it is for him. If you consider that grade, it's his actual grade. But however, if that's not his actual grade, then I'm telling you, you're not being fair here.
Yeah.
And for me, if it's really 2 is this grade, it's not a big deal. I don't care of the number that's on the report card.
Yeah.
It only shows which subject that he needs to work on more. It doesn't mean that he's stupid. It doesn't mean that he's dumb. He may just not like that subject, or he may need to learn more about that subject, or the teacher is not teaching well.
So, there's also that part, yes.
Right, because the teacher needs to engage in order that to be able that kid to attract their attention, so they would willing to learn that subject. So for me, the report card is never a big deal. And it goes back to when I was in high school. So I got a really bad grade on my report for history. I got 4. But I was a science major.
Yeah.
And so all the other grades for math, physics, and chemistry, it's all like 9 and 8. So my mom was like saying, I was crying, right? I was so scared that my mom would get mad at me. And then she said, why'd you even get 4 for a history lesson? I mean, you know, physics, chemistry, or math is harder than history. And then I was like, I don't know. And then it's like, oh, well, I know. I think the teacher is not as exciting as other classes, so you don't get as much. And then you can see from the average score as well, it's all low. So
oh,
I'm like,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm safe. So yeah, even my parents don't even, you know, make a big deal about it, because they know sometimes it's not your kid's mistake when they got a bad grade on the report card.
Yeah, that is so true.
Yeah, so parents, make sure you don't just take the blame to your kid, because there might be some underlying condition that happened.
No, yeah, for reals. No, as a teacher myself, I can agree with this, because it is true. Oftentimes, I think I struggle a lot more, not with the content, but with the preparation of how can I deliver this content and making sure my students understand this in different ways. This has to do a lot with preparation, really. It's just preparation and also understanding who your audience is, right?
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, people, and this is where, again, the multidisciplinary thing comes to play and is really appreciated outside, because the reason why I can think this way, because in graphic design, it doesn't matter how your skill in creating art is. What matters the most is whether what you're trying to communicate works. And again, it is communication. And this is something that I find most teachers are having a problem with. We learn in graphic design, partly is communication, that we are trying to find the most effective communication tool. We're trying to use the most effective communication tool to communicate, to convey what is this advertising or what this campaign is trying to convey, right? And that helps a lot in different ways. So I would like to say this, though. Parents, it's not that we're trying to say that we are better than you, that we're more knowledgeable than you, that we are, you know, whatever. No, but this is just something that we believe to be true. And this is something that we live out as an experience as well. Because, and this is something that I've had a conversation with numerous people regarding this. Their success, even in university, is not, the premise of that is never about what they do or what they achieve or what they didn't achieve during their school years. This is just the reality of it, right? I've had a conversation with students who were the B's and the C's, and mostly C's actually, and now his GPA is 4.0, and he just transferred to UC Berkeley. Okay?
Wow.
So for parents who want to debate and argue, but you know what? If he wants, like, if my kids want to go to a top university in the world, blah, 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 my child has to get like a really good score. He was like mostly B's and C's, and he's now like in Berkeley. So I'm
yeah,
like,
I heard your podcast with him.
Right. And I was like, hello. Right. And I've had multiple conversations with people who are now successful that when they were in school, they didn't know what to do. It wasn't until they found what they really want to do that they started to put all the efforts into it, and they flourished. So I guess like what we're trying to convey is this: what matters most and what should matter most is to help every single child to find what they really want to do, and that will be the biggest success for not just parents, but also for any adults who participate in any child's life. Because if we can do that, they will have a much earlier pathway to whatever that they want to do, right? And that's just the heart of what we're trying to say. And so when we said the scores doesn't matter, because again, we have a lot of examples and we have a lot of evidence that shows us that it does not matter. That's just the reality of it, right? I'm a graphic designer student. Like, my GPA was like 3.1 something, but I excel in teaching. How does that make sense? How does that translate to from what I achieve in university to I'm doing right now? And I can't say that I'm the best teacher, but I do realize that I'm actually a good one, right? And it all comes back again because I found value in what I'm doing. And that's why I put a lot of effort in developing and growing in what I'm doing. And this goes to every single one of us, every single one of us. And you can take example from, a very unconventional way, I guess, like for now, a streamer, a Twitch streamer can earn millions of dollars in contracts, but he never graduated high school. So if you want to talk about successful, we have to look at the current era that we live in right now. And he is not just one person. There are a lot of other streamers out there who earns thousands and tens of thousands of dollars per month. just gaming. In the past, gaming was looked at as something that is, you know, a lazy activity that doesn't help anyone, that's whatever. But now it's an entertainment and earns people a lot of money. So how do we argue with that, right? So that's just what the premise, I guess, when we're saying that grades doesn't hold that much weight anymore. Now, yeah. I do want to talk about grades for a second, though, because we both know that grades still hold a lot of advantage, especially when it comes to applying to universities, right?
Correct.
And that is still something that you know, that's still how they, you know, that it's part of the admission test, really, right? Right. Why do you think universities are still so hardcore when it comes to using that kind of admission system, really?
Well, now most of the Ivy League university, they don't actually just use the grade. The grade is just sorting way kind of thing. But the real test is the interview. So they conduct interview and they ask the student to write a letter. And that letter is pays like a big chunk of the grading and decide whether this kid going to enter the school or not. So, and then the other thing is you have to know some values, what the universities and employer are looking for. For example, your ability to solve a problem. Us as a designer, we have an advantage because we have to be able to see flaws.
Yeah.
And then we have to make a solution for that flaw. Instead of others, they might be able to point out the flaw in a design or in the society, but they may not be able to come up with solution for it.
Yeah.
So that's where designer have an advantage on. So for me, designer or not, you have to be able to have that ability. So for kids especially, you can see their cognitive growth by letting them do the things by themselves. For example, the four-year kid tried to reach the freezer. I want to see how they try to reach the freezer. So would they get a small chair and go on the chair or jump to open it? So it's their way of problem solution. And that's what I'm going to help them in making sure those grades are good. And then if those grades is not good, then they have to come up with other solution of what to make or to impress the university or the employer they're working to. Yeah. So it's really, you know, looking on every aspect, but seriously, the number one thing is for you to be able to see a problem and to come up with a solution for it.
Okay, that's so life. I think that's a very important information because, yes, the grades are there to act as a sieve, right? So it's sort out those things. So there is that, still that part, but I love when you are sharing that information to us right now that the biggest chunk would actually come from the interview process, because I do believe that what matters for a, you know, the biggest factor to someone's success will always be their character. It's not about their knowledge. It's not about their skills, but it is really about their character, right? Because you can be knowledgeable, but if you suck as a person, you don't get a job.
Yeah, people doesn't want to work with you.
Yeah, if you have a own, if you have your own company, then well, guess what? People don't want to work with you. So if you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, if you know that series, what it is about? Boyle had a food truck, and no one wants to work with him, and the food truck had to burn down. So that's his saving grace. So again, if you are a horrible person, no matter how skilled you are, no matter how smart you are, at the end of the day, you will be an island all by yourself. That's just how it is. And I love the fact that this is the real information and a real fact is that Ivy League universities are looking into your essays, so how you answer things, your view, your perspectives, and then also your values. Again, grades at this point, I think, will still be a measurement, but the fact of the matter is that, and this is something that I feel all schools should get, it's their character, it's their values, it's a way that they actually can display themselves as a real person and what kind of person they are. That's the biggest thing, right? But has the school system actually, at least the school system here in Indonesia, has the school been doing a good job in shaping the students, helping the students, or even preparing the students to be able to develop their own character in such a way? Or is it still the reality that there's still a lot of emphasis on academic excellence?
Well, the last time I teach is in 2013 or 12. I do teach is it's like business etiquette, more like personal development class. So I teach them how to greet people. I teach them how to do shake hands. So a lot of university putting a lot of effort into shaping this students into working material, because it just happened with me too, as you may know. So the students nowadays, they may have a communication problem, may not necessarily all. So for this kid, some university even provide with the class, it's called the etiquette to communicate with the teachers.
Okay, wow. Okay, so that
for me, I don't think it's necessary.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so because that actually brings about or underline a serious problem, which means that during their high school years or the K-12 really, that they just were not equipped with the, because that's a common sense. That's a
exactly
common freaking sense, people, right? But it just goes to show that just because you have enough resources to get you to university doesn't mean you have the right attitude to be one, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess, like, for me, and this is also based on my experience as well as a teacher, is that I do realize that there is a bigger emphasis on academic excellence and the whole conversation about, oh yeah, we need to create the students to be an excellent character, this and that. In reality, we don't have classes, we don't have, that's an additional but never an importance. In addition to what you're trying to teach them, if they make a mistake, you correct them, but there's not an actual emphasis on creating a workshop or a class to really build that, because that's a skill, right? That is a skill. So
it's a soft skill. For me, it should be something that every kids know. Like, ever since they're young, they should know the four magic words, right? Like, thank you, please, sorry, please, So I seriously don't know where this generation has a gap in, because those are the magic words that we've been using a lot. And then, like us, we're speaking in English. I know they said, oh, this is the Western influence. I don't think so.
No.
I was pretty much, just spent a lot of year abroad, but I do think I still have a good manner in terms of talking to people. And then one thing that I always say, the manner takes you far. Guess what? I never applied for a job in my life. I always got job offers.
Same.
And exactly. Yeah, people will remember you when you have that passion, that manners, you know, all the knowledge. It's easy for you to get a job. But then, if you just try to equip yourself with the right equipment to be a human being right now, you know, like, you know, able to work as a teamwork, but also able to work as a leader, work as part of the team. And then you have to have all of those values. The communication, your communication skill has to be good. And this communication skill doesn't necessarily mean just to talk to your friend, but you have to be able to know when to talk to other people, like say your employer or your user, and then to some people on the street. It's all different. You have to differentiate that language that you're using.
Yep. Okay, so yeah, go for it first.
No. So basically, those are the skills that I think that is very necessary for you to be able to separate those layers, and then to be able to know who am I talking to. You need to do research a lot, yeah. And you need to read. And Indonesian doesn't read that much. So this is, yeah. But then, when I first put my kids in this school, because they use IB system, I was shocked because every day they bring home one book, every since kindergarten. And there are certain days that they bring two books.
Yeah, IB is so, that way. Yeah, IB is a very American system, right? So there is a lot of emphasis where you do have to go through books, which I feel like it's really important. So I do agree with that. But I just want to ask you this, though. Like, there is, like, you know, the argument that, when it comes to those soft skills, you can't really put that just to the schools, because that is also partly with the parents and how the parents are teaching them. So that's why schools are not really entirely responsible for equipping the student, the child, with those kind of skills. Therefore, there shouldn't be a specific class to equip them. Do you agree with that?
Well, to me, it's really hard because we're talking about different systems. Like, different schools have different systems, like the national system, the national class, the IB system. They all have different things going on. And I'm not familiar with the national system, because I know that they still use the same exact method as we use when we were young. Yeah. And I know that that method doesn't actually work for me at all.
Uh-huh.
And because the lowest rank that I've been was in rank 3, and I was like, whoa, what did I do? You know, I never even reached the Big Ten, the top 10. But then when I go to college, everything is so different. Like, I started to like going to school, and I see the professor, they really become the real influencer.
Yeah.
So it's not like the influencer that we see, right? Nowadays in social media, but they really influence you to become who you're gonna be in life.
Yeah.
Like, if you, so I really do think that the educational system that we see now, it takes a lot of improvement. It takes, you know, we are still far.
We're still far. So I guess, like, what I can take from what you just said is that it's not just from the house, because I've heard that, when it comes to the soft skills, it also has to come from the parents, but not really. Again, if you think about it, students spend about 8 to 10 hours with the teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are spending 8 to 10 hours in school. So to say that it's also like the majority of it has to come from the family, it has to come from the parents. I think, like, from what you just said, I can agree with that, is that not really. If you think about, just like, it's math, people. 8 to 10 hours in their lives, they pretty much have about 14 to 16 hours left. If you include, if you deduct that from, like, sleeping time, eating, toilet breaks, general entertainment, that's another 10 hours, right? So you have about, like, four or six hours that they can spend free, right? To do their work, to do whatever. So you're looking at a very small window, in which they will spend time to interact with the parents.
Yeah, correct.
Right? So, and that just means the parents will not have as many opportunities as the schools might have in order for the students to actually learn all of these soft skills. So,
and you're talking about the parents that actually go home by 5. But
exactly.
The other parents that go home at 10 and the kids are asleep by the time they reach home.
Exactly. So I grew up that way. My parents would come home when I was already asleep. And I would go to school when they are still sleeping. So to say that it's also with the parents to do whatever, and then it's also, so it's not just from the school. There is a that reality that this, that it's just doesn't fit the theory that schools actually have a lot more time, and there is a lot more need. Because if the argument is that, oh, it's because universities need grades to accept students, and now that we heard about that, that there's actually a lot more emphasis on their interviews, which reveals their character, which reveals their manners, which reveals who they are as a person, and also to be able to talk about the values, the soft skills. Yeah. Now that we get to see that as the biggest chunk of it, and let me just kind of like get this last thought in, right? So we cannot use the same argument to put a lot more emphasis on the academics. Yes, it's still important, but if the universities are also looking at the soft skills to admit students into their universities, then schools has to understand that we need to make a change into the way that we teach the students, right? It cannot just be an additional thing that a teacher do aside from the main thing, which is to educate content. We have to shift, right?
Yeah. So a simple thing like the way the teacher treats the helper at school, the kid sees that. And it reflects to them, and that's how they need to treat others, even though they're just helpers.
Yeah.
Students may think they're not teachers, but still they're older people, so they still have to respect them. And with the securities at school, so there's a lot of manners and values that we can teach at school. And then that's where the human teachers comes in, you know?
Yes.
It's like you said, if not, then without the human part, without the human values, then what are we? I mean, just open Google every day and YouTube, you know?
This is the kind of like weird thing. So you brought that, and that actually is my proudest moment. So I have a lot of students who excel. So I teach both English and global perspectives and research, right? So my proudest moment was never about my students achieving 90 plus percent or A plus or grade A or whatever. That's like never my proudest moment. My proudest moment was when my students saw that our security was wearing a shoe that has a broken sole. They got together and bought the security a brand new pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And for me, that was my proudest moment. And what really got to me was during the parent teachers conference that the parents were, they said that they attribute that to me because they believe because of what I taught their child what to do. So for me, again, that the sad reality is that I'm a minority in a sense that it's not all teachers
that's
exactly. doing this, but it should be. Right. That's, and again,
exactly.
If the need of a student to succeed in life, whether it's in university or if it's after university and they get to the real world and they work, it's about their character, it's about their soft skills, and it's about their manners. Then we have a big problem, because the 12 years that they are in school, those three are actually the lowest priority, we have a big problem.
Yeah. And do you notice that for years, for the majors in high school, usually number one is for science, second for
social science,
humanity,
yeah,
social sciences, and then last is for culture, art and culture. But yeah, in reality, art and culture is supposed to sit in the beginning, because that's where, you know, the culture are, the Eastern culture, you heard it a lot, where now the Westerners start using the Eastern culture and how to greet people.
Yep.
And, well, it's kind of ironic in a way, because our country is famous for being very courteous to people, kind, you know, and all those properties. And it's also disappearing now.
Oh, yeah.
it's even sad when you see the worst that happening right now is on the rural area. Because they don't actually see how we city people, the urban people, interact. But what they see is from the social media.
Oh, yeah.
From the, what's it called? The soap opera. And then they think that's how...
That's how people think. That's how, like, how people in the big cities should work. Right.
So it's hard, because we think that the global citizen should be able to see more, but then again, what they see is what they want to see, so they choose. They have the ability to choose what they don't want to see, but sometimes the truth is not what they want to see.
No.
And this is so true in terms of, like, this COVID situation. I hardly got any algorithm that leads me to the hoax, the vaccine hoax and stuff like that. So I'm confused, like, where they get this information from. And apparently the algorithm doesn't reach me, because my environment, my friends, the social media environment, are they all come pretty much from the same background. So the hoax is not there.
Yeah.
But four different layers, everything is hoax.
My family WhatsApp group.
Yes. WhatsApp group is the worst.
Oh, my God. It's the craziest thing. So every single time, and it's not the older people I'm talking to, but I'm actually talking about my cousins who shared information. And I was like, wait, let me just do a real quick check. This is like in 2015. Why are we still talking about this? Right?
Because the research.
It's as simple as, if I receive some news, it takes 2 seconds for me to type it in into Google. It takes another 10 seconds for me to see the result. And then it takes additional 15 seconds for me to browse through it. So you're not even spending a minute to do a fact checking for any information that you get.
Nope.
And still people don't bother to do it.
The most is like 5 minutes.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. There are so many conversations about that.
Yeah, so this is why I think the testing system needs to get improved.
Yeah.
Testing is good, but not like ABC, because answers may not be as simple as ABC. It could be both.
It could be something else.
You know?
It could be something else,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it could be something else. And just like I told you before, that what we learn to be true not necessarily be true tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like,
we talked about, like, the whole, I guess, like, I'm going to try to summarize to the listeners so far right here, right? So, first of all, we have nothing against teachers. And again, this is actually highlighting the fact that the teachers actually need support. And the only support that they can get is through a reform over the education system that we have now. They are teaching the way that they're teaching is because that's the way that they're trained to do. And that's the kind of education that they receive in the first place as well. So we can't actually put this on the teachers, because that's what they know, right? in order for them to be able to teach differently, they have to know differently. So this is actually goes higher than the teachers themselves. So that's number one. Number two, we have nothing against grading and assessment system. It's there for a reason. It's there to help us know whether, for example, we know a student understand a concept only through the assessment that we give them. But that's never that never should depend on the B's and the C's and the A's. It should never depend on the grades. The grades tells us one story of where they are. But if I change the way that I give them scores through feedback, through constructive feedback, assessment still happens. But the way that they receive the grade is through the feedback that can help them improve on the things that they have, they are blindsided to, and I can give them an angle for them to actually improve on. That actually, if you know how to grade someone, we start actually from that. Okay, this is the assessment. This is how the students are doing. From this, I get to see that they are actually missing from missing the point of this topic, that topic, but they are succeed in applying this concept and that concept. And so from this rubric, we give them an assigned score. So if we never have to go to the assigned score and we stop at that assessment, at that feedback format, we give to that student, don't you think that they can take this instead of being demotivated, but they actually see, oh, these are the things that I did good. These are the things I need to be aware of. Let me try it for the next part. Right? But we're so caught up, and especially with the national curriculum, we're so caught up with the, oh, I need to give them marks. I need to give them scores.
Yeah.
And for me, again, there's nothing wrong with the assessment, but if we only focus on that, our students will have it the worst. Because again, it's demotivating and it's demoralizing. And it should never be up to the teacher to pick up the students when the system is punching them down. You know?
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be up to teachers. As a teacher, our heart is we want to give the students constructive feedback so they can improve. But we are shackled by the system in which we need to give them grades. Right?
I bet some of the teachers will do the extra mile and not only providing the grades, but the reason why the grades are there. And which is, it should be all the teachers doing their job. But I know it's a lot of work for teachers, you know, especially in the public school. They probably have like one class, 40 students or more, sometimes even 15, 60. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine one teacher writing all of those.
Yeah, and then make a personalized feedback for each student in class. We understand that. And that's why, like we said, teachers do need support. And this comes from financially speaking, for example. So they don't have to worry about their financial aspect, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to feel trapped. They can actually just do that. Again, to split the number of students per teacher and all those. See, there's a research on that as well. So that's why we're trying to say that teachers do need support. Teachers do need help, right? And so ultimately speaking, I guess, like, I think you touched point on this before. We are still way behind. It's still a very long road ahead. But we do need to improve. There is a need for that. It's not just, we should. But no, it's really more a need now. Because if we still do the things that we're doing right now and we don't change in the next 5 to 10 years, the future generations are screwed. It's just what it is. It really is just what it is. So, wow. This is like a really fun conversation. I'm a bit dramatic. Because, number one, that's just who I am. Number two, because it is a dramatic conversation, with a lot of, you know, it has a huge effect on a lot of things. Yeah. If you think about the immediate effect and the long-term effect, because if we still are stuck with this, then the way that that our future generations will think will potentially, for the most part, still remain the same, right?
Yeah.
So unless there are a lot more people that can realize this and be more aware of this and help spread this awareness around, it's going to be hard to push for a change, right? Because if people don't understand the need for this and they think it's everything is fine, why do we need to change? They will not want to change, and that's going to be even harder to deal with, right? So thank you so much for a very fun conversation. And
thank you.
Yeah, so people, you again, our my goal, especially as the someone who owned this podcast, is not to say that we know better than you. No, but this is just something that I want us to be able to share from our own experiences, our own what we gone through, what we see, because oftentimes we only hear it, but we never experience it. But for those people who are in it, we see the difference between the reality and the ideal or the perfect world, where, you know, teaching is about equipping the future generation and all of those lofty things. But in reality, we are shackled so much by a lot of constraints, and it's hard. It's really hard to prioritize sometimes. So again, as listeners, I think for me, if you can take this with a grain of salt, right? And to question this yourself, are the things that we talked about just now, has any, you know, has any form of truth in it, or has any sense to it? You decide in the end. You decide for yourself. You decide for your own children, if you have children, whether it's true or not. Because ultimately, this is just one perspective. And I do hope that you can develop your own perspective over it. And enough time, the ultimate goal would be everyone is talking about this, right? And that's how we make a change in the end.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, thank you so much for listening. This is the Nagalai Podcast with a really good friend of mine, Kak Tasha Nuarte. So, stay tuned. We're going to have a lot more conversation about education in the near future. See you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.